Welcome, everyone. Get started in just a couple of minutes.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Steve. Welcome. We'll give people just a few more minutes to join. On today's agenda, we have three project reviews to complete. Four project reviews, but in three JIRA tickets. And then we're going to pivot and start talking about Dublin. Parviz is going to give a Tiger Team update, and then I'm going to start the Dublin brainstorming session. And we're not quite at quorum yet, but we'll get started shortly.
Morning, Chris.
Morning.
Did you get my note? I've got some production things I need to do at 9. Is it possible I could go first?
Sure.
Thanks. AF.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll take care of that in just a minute.
No problem.
Yeah. Give people another minute or so to join, and then we'll get started.
Do you normally have the chair? Do you normally have us present, or did you want me to? And you know, just wondering whether to prepare, you know, my PowerPoint.
Yes, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, I'll get that ready.
Then. Okay,
thanks.
Sure. Okay, it looks like we are quorum now. So let's get started. Show me my Zoom response. Sorry, having technical difficulties with Zoom at the moment. We'll start up. I'll turn it over to you, Jonathan, as soon as I can unshare my screen.
No problem.
I haven't seen this before. It's going into spinning ball on the Zoom.
Yeah, sort of. I had a problem with me getting in too, so I don't think it's just you. So, I mean, it eventually I had to kind of kill everything and start over, but I hope you don't have to.
Yeah, same here. Let's see, let me try something. I may have to kill this, but I'll try to bring it up on my mobile.
Yeah, sometimes.
Chris, do you want me to go first, or I cannot share?
No, it's Jonathan's gonna go first. I'm having problems right now with my Zoom.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. Okay, there we go. Jonathan, go ahead. You should be able to share now.
Okay. Should be this one. Oops, can you see that or not?
It's coming. There it is. We got it.
Okay. Yeah, I flipped it to full screen. I wasn't sure if it kept it or not. So, ready to launch or?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so here's our AF Casablanca. I did put that into a into my release documents under the same name. So it is there. I can show you that in a minute. So the API changes, no existing public APIs were changed. It's been pretty solid for a while. As I was thinking about it, I thought maybe I should mention this. There is a new private API I added to R3, which is to get some configuration info. And I use that in order to get configurable properties for services. This is part of my overall goal for Casablanca, which is to make it a whole lot easier for all the applications to get both configuration of AF, but also the certificates. So in order to generate both, I can look, you know, point at the right environment, whether it's, you know, stable, one of the dailies or something like that, and get the configuration properties you need for those services. So I don't publish that API because it's really, you know, only done by what's already there as an agent. It says, okay, what are the properties for this environment? continues to build out the configurations. The public APIs are documented in the GUI. They actually, you know, there's actually an API spot for the GUI, but also in the wiki. So we could see it on an as basis. Questions on that? Do you have concept of private API, basically between components, or is that a problem?
So is it between components, or would it be okay? So usually we do like to see that anytime that the different projects are talking to each other, just so that everybody is aware of what the changes are and how they can line up with it.
Okay. When I say there's, that's what I would call a public API. Other components, meaning a AppC or any of those are public APIs. Yep. What I meant was is that AAF is built of seven different internal microservices. One, the main one is the API server. The other ones are things like GUIs. In this case, this is pushed out by the locator. So it it's between AAF components, not between public components. Does that make it clear, or is that still the same answer?
Yeah, that makes it clear. So then it's,
that's why I call it private API. Just
that's, yes. Okay. So since it's internal to your project, we don't need to review it in depth here. It's really when it's exposed externally where we want to make sure that all the projects are lining up.
Right, exactly. That's what I thought at first, but I thought I'd bring it up just in case my assumptions were incorrect. But anyway, the public APIs haven't changed. They're still there, and that's how everybody else talks to it. Mm-hmm. If I can get the page to change, that would be nice. Down. Next page. Come on, page. It is not moving. Okay. It's like, well, that's nice.
Yeah, sometimes you have to press a down arrow while the page down
button.
Yeah,
I'm trying to. Yeah. I'm going to move it this way and kind of, if I can't get it to do it this way, I'm hitting down arrows. Maybe I need to move over to the side, page down.
Click once.
It is just like super frozen here. So let me see whether I can move it to slideshow, play from current slide. Oh, that's kind of ugly. Can you, but if it goes down, there we go. Sorry, whatever works, right? this would be better if it wasn't this big old slide. So let me try, play
this
from
is,
presenter
good,
view.
Yeah.
Nope, okay now.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, we should be able to see it. I just need it big enough for you guys to read it. This is actually a slide I have for some time. I'm not sure anybody really understands how AF is set up in production, you know, at one of the ISPs, which I didn't put in here because it's an ONAP. But we have Cassandra instances. You can have, typically you'll want three in a particular data center at least. That's a Cassandra typical setup. What we have also is we set up multiple AF services in each one of the data centers of each of the components. So the main one is the AF service. I put that in bold because that's the one that everybody talks to for the most part. And there's other components that are deployed with it. We typically put those in the same data center because then the database access is very fast because we want to be as fast as possible. In this particular scenario, we have three data centers, and imagine they are spread across the country or the world. Okay, so you can easily imagine that one of these is in the U.S., another one's in Europe, another one's in China, or, you know, multiple ones. The client is, access is resilient. It's able to get to the closest one as possible. And then caches information that's important. So if it has to, look up, for instance, what are the permissions related to a particular ID, it doesn't have to keep asking that every time. That's part of the CADI framework, which is delivered to the apps themselves, and they hold on to that, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. If for whatever reason this data center, or more likely the network to the data center, goes down, it immediately goes to one of the other ones. So it's always resilient in that sense. Any one of the services can go down, and any set of data services can go down. Cassandra handles any of the databases going down. So it's highly resilient structure with lots of redundancy real time that gives you access locally if everything's running, but also if something happens, immediately puts you off into somewhere else in the world that could handle it for you. Is that part clear here?
Well, one question, Jonathan, this part is, if you increase that replicas from 3 to 5, aren't we going to get closer to the 5.9 reliability?
In our production, we actually do 6.9s of reliability and without a problem.
Three replicas?
Well, in each data center, right? Because the we could talk about Cassandra recommendations, but we found that splitting the data between the three instances in the data center is plenty. Plus, remember, the data is also split out across the rest of the things. Actually, in our environment, we have 5 data centers, and everybody goes to their closest one. So that's the database we're talking about, or are you talking about the services themselves?
Yeah, you could look at the instances of Cassandra, yeah?
Yeah, if you're talking about Cassandra, yeah.
Yeah.
You, according to AF, you may configure Cassandra however you like. Okay. I'm not dictating with the use of AAF that you configure Cassandra in one way or the other. This is what works well in our production environment, and we've never had a problem with it. If any particular company says, you know what, I'd rather have 5 replicas in a data center, go for it, you know, because we simply use Cassandra as it's intended. So feel free to make 5 if you think that helps. You know, there's no stopping us. Right?
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, it's really a personal preference from, you know, a Cassandra team's point of view. However, we recommend at least 3 on a data center just because that gets you, you know, at least one. Every now and again, some Cassandra instance somewhere will go down, but if you split the data between the 3, you'll always have 2 that picks up the whole data set, and you're not pulling it from across the world. And that's the key. You want to pull things locally, let Cassandra keep the data in sync, but try to pick up locally as much as possible because you want security fast.
You should also have the eventual consistency to guarantee that, yeah?
Yeah. Because that's part of the Cassandra. That's why we chose that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that's, we walked in with, ONAP with this. I just wasn't sure if anybody knew that it existed. So since resiliency is now a hot topic, I wanted to point out what AF already does. Not sure why I duplicated this. API changes, or did I go backwards? It looks like I just went backwards, doesn't it? And now I've got 15 minutes to my production thing. Yeah. Well, I don't get this. You know, why is it just so stinky? All right, let me just go home.
Hey,
yeah,
Jonathan,
I don't know why it's...
Why don't you try reopening your file. That it may just have got, well, it looks like it's working now.
All right, yeah, now it's, maybe I went to the end or something like that. I'm so sorry. So here's my content. You know, I think I went to the end or something. That may have been the problem. Maybe that was the summary. That's why I'm sitting there doing this. I beg your pardon. There is, you know, there are 7 services. Primary activity for Casablanca is to enable the apps to utilize more easily. No model changes, and we continue to use Cassandra. All right. So, my fault. I was in the summary slide and thought that was the agenda slide. Sorry. So in Casablanca, we always work on 3 things. Keeping security is top most in my mind because we're the security service a security service. I did want to point out that AAF passed a rigorous independent test in 2016, a company version, for all the, I don't remember everything that it involved, but we did quite well, and what we didn't get, we fixed already. So resolving securities in Casablanca, I'm focused on solving the security issues from Nexus. The bouncy castle, we finally got a good version that shows up cleanly. We updated Jetty, but now it's failing again. So my plan is to use that OParent strategy to, you know, let us keep it up to date, because every time I change it, it seems like another security issue is found, and then we have to go back. So code coverage, and this is in terms of JUnits. We are up to 32.3%. That's not the 50% goal. The reasons for missing the goal is I lost a resource. He's moved groups. Most of AF is not really conducive to a JUnit test. If you think about it, what we're supposed to be doing is having real identities that cannot be faked. And that creates a real problem in terms of faking tests for JUnit, because you know, how do you create those identities? If you're typing it in manually, we could do it. But having that identity there and available and change them and all that kind of thing during a JUnit automatically is really a problem when your whole business is to be unfakeable. So we've got some problems with that. So it takes a little longer to do the JUnits for us. The JUnit tests written for Beijing, we have had some failures there. They will fail periodically when they're running under load in Jenkins, and we're trying to figure out why. Seems to be some sort of Jenkins multi-thread issue or something like that. We have, I'm spending time redoing some of those so they don't, false fail, if you will. So we are spending time on the JUnits, but it's not getting us faster or up to the 50% coverage yet. The other thing is my main focus is certificate generation, getting those configurations to the apps. Otherwise, it just can't be used. So that's where we are with that. Stability. AAF has an excellent track record in production environment. We run for months and months and months without an issue. The issues that have arisen have not been stability issues, and we simply fix them, of course. We have an AAF test stable environment, which has been running since before Beijing, minus a couple of updates, obviously, to Casablanca code. But that's the one I have everybody pointing to. It just stays up unless I take it down. We will, of course, show our 72-hour stability test in the lab as required. I'm not worried. There we hit the resiliency API changes specifically, and that's what happened. I went to the end. Questions, comments?
Quick question to Nathan to the Gildas. In terms of the code coverage, is your plan to reach 50% by M4?
I don't think it's possible given my resources right now. I have some people trying to do things externally, but like I say, it's a very difficult thing to do, and so I end up having to rewrite them. And I'm not able to do them myself personally, and I lost another. So I don't think I'm going to make 50. It's not a realistic goal for me by M4.
Okay.
Unfortunately. Just so you know, when AF was built, I did not do a lot of JUnits for that very purpose. I had a lot of JUnits that did individual classes, because that was critical. You know, if you have a class that, for instance, does checks a regular expression, I have a lot of those. But where I tested is I had an independent test engine that actually used real identities from clients, and it does a whole regression test of things. And so in that sense, we actually have a language that we call that says, here, add this property, remove this property. You know, it tests the API, it tests the agents, it tests everything in there. And then when it comes time for deployment, I would always run, JMeter, high volume tests on certain key APIs, the ones like getting up, et cetera. And that's worked really well for us. I haven't complained because, got to do what you need to do within ONAP, but that's why you don't see a lot of JUnits. It's just it's not very easy to do when you're not supposed to be able to fake identities. That's just the way it is. So, we'll work on it, but that's what we're trying to do.
Hey, Jonathan, this is Pavis. So I know in Casablanca there is no requirement to do a service mission SGU. I was wondering how AAF and SGU they would reconcile the security and the CA aspects. Do you have anything to say about that?
I wasn't quite sure. Did you say ST?
CA. The CA.
Oh, the Certificate Authority. Yeah. That showed up when I first came to this effort, which was there was no official Certificate Authority. Sorry, I need to turn this off. The Certificate Authority. We designed the one element of AAF, which is called the Certificate Manager, to be, help me out here, Amy,
it's a registration. The certificate,
registration authority,
registration authority. So basically it's responsible for authenticating the entity requesting a certificate or even renewing a certificate and then
automatically.
It interfaces with whatever CA you want to use.
Right.
So an operator would choose their own CA. AAF is set up to have essentially a test CA built into it. That's one of the things Jonathan has been working on so that it can be run in a lab environment. That test CA is not meant for a production environment because you really don't have the root of trust there. Is the question about providing a more long-term CA or just having a test?
Yes, the long-term CA for the service mesh in Casablanca there is no mandate. Yeah, this is optional. Yeah.
Well, it's not optional if you're doing HTTPS because you need to be able to trust each other without, unless you're trading, there's some things. So in my opinion, you have to have some CA. So in order to give everybody certificates that, they can validate with each other. I don't think we want self-signed certificates. Go ahead.
So Jonathan, really quickly, what you are doing is you are providing a CA.
Yes.
That is appropriate to use in a lab or a test environment.
Exactly.
AAF is designed, the CertMan within AAF is designed to be hooked to a production, more of a production CA that an operator would provide. So most operators have a production, some form of production CA, whether it be one they run internally or a public CA. But AAF is designed to link to one of those for a production use.
Yeah. But for our test things, I have created one that we can use so that we actually use, a certificate authority as part of our trust chain. That makes it a more realistic test.
But Pavis, you mentioned Istio. And then we have a discussion about the comparison between some of the things we're doing with AAF and the capabilities of Istio. That's something to come back on, I think.
Yeah. In Casablanca, there is no big deal, yeah? EV to the next release. But that's good. Thanks, Jonathan.
Okay.
That's what that.
I need to drop anything else?
No,
okay.
Thank you.
This presentation is in the AAF presentation, deployment documents. If you need,
Can you send me a link to it when it's convenient, and I'll post it with the meeting notes. Okay, thank you. Why don't we move right along, Stephen Wright, for VVP and VNF requirements?
Sure, thanks, Chris. Okay, so you should see a screen now. We'll start with VNF requirements. just to remind folks, VNF requirements is a documentation project rather than a code development project. And the documentation is published through the docs.onap.org, which resolves to onap.read.the.docs.io. When you go to the documentation that's published, there is this little version pull down in the lower right that lots of folks don't see. Look for the latest version to see what we're working on at the moment. Otherwise, you can find the prior versions published there. And this, at the moment, is all under the user guides, although there is a proposal to pull it out to a higher level. We're still working that with the documentation folks. But at the moment, it's this VNF provider tab. So we produce a number of different deliverables. Guidelines document that's sort of high-level directional thing, good for forward-looking information. There's the requirements document itself that is the detailed requirements. Test case descriptions, that's our handoff to the testing projects, which is the VNF SDK project and the PVP project. We have also a provider use case, which is an annotation of an end-to-end use case that is trying to highlight where the VNF requirements come into play. So it's, we only have the scale-out manual scale-out use case documented there. To give a bit more depth here, one of the things we've added in this release is we've pulled out an annex that's just a list of all of the requirements without any of the other text around it. And there's ways to export this into Excel or PDF or CSV and so forth. Because I know the main use for this, for these requirements, is in our sort of RFP type purposes. So being able to get it out as a spreadsheet is kind of convenient for those purposes. You can also search for particular requirements using the search field here. So in terms of what we were trying, so let me go back up and look at our M3. We're doing our review here at the moment. There are no APIs to other projects from documentation. What we do have is a check mark in the M2 checkpoint checklist where other projects are supposed to flag things to us if they have things that they think are changing the VNF requirements. We didn't get any of those indications this release. We don't have APIs. We do have handoffs to the testing projects, and so I'll walk through those handoffs a little bit in a subsequent step. We use Jira to do our backlog management and then push the changes into read the docs using RST. There's no binaries, there's no system tests associated with the documentation. So that's why you see a lot of NAs in the M3 checklist. And in terms of the scope of work, the things we're trying to do in the Casablanca release, we had some toolchain improvements to try to improve the ability to index and extract requirements based on metadata. The main task we have is dealing with bug fixes and updates to align with the other features in Casablanca. If we have additional use cases that have impact on VNF providers, then we should be documenting those. I believe Scott was planning to update the manual use scale out use case to the automatic scale out use case to line up with Casablanca. Updating the test descriptions to again align with Casablanca content and align with the capabilities of the test projects. And beyond testing, we're also looking at a badging effort for VNFs that is based on the CII badging type of website. So the concept would be that VNF providers could check off against various requirements to get a badge in that format. prior to or in addition to testing, because not all of the BNF requirements are actually testable requirements. A lot of them are, as I said, RFP level text, so there's a lot of high level informative things in there that aren't easily testable with normal testing methodologies. So if I go back and talk a little bit about the handoff to the testing projects, the test case material here was developed in the Beijing release. We have basically two test cases that deal with basically looking at the VNF package information that's handed off between the VNF provider and the service operator or the INET platform operator, checking whether there's some information element present and if it's defined in such a way that you can test for range limits on that information element, then you can have tests for that kind of thing as well. So there's an obvious linkage with the information modeling effort here, and we've had discussions with those folks trying to get some further coordination on that as the modeling efforts refine. But what we have as a handoff at the moment is this appendix, which does a mapping between the requirement number, whether it's visible in the VNF package, meaning is there some information element corresponding to that requirement, identifying what the requirement is and then whether or not it was tested or whether there was a test available from some of the other platform components. We don't control in the VNF requirements project whether the tests exist or not. We just simply document whether we know about them. So if you scroll down through the list, in Beijing, there were only a couple of tests available on the CSAR format. Most of the tests were available on the VVP, in VVP on the heat template formats for onboarding. So there were a lot more tests on various heat parameters. What we've been working with the VVP folks is to get a cross-reference between the heat testing scripts in VVP and the requirement numbers so that you can do a bidirectional linkage, and hopefully we can get this to turn into a test name or a test number at some stage here as well, just to get that linkage in place. I guess that's probably the 50,000 foot view on VNF requirements. Are there any comments, questions?
Okay, thank you, Steve. Why don't you move on to VNF or VVP instead, excuse me.
Okay, so VVP is counterpart project. VVP was designed as a standalone tool. Let me find the issue list. So let me go to the M3, is probably a good place to start. So we're doing the walkthrough at the moment. There are no APIs between VVP and other platform components. So there are various pieces to VVP internally, but it's basically a standalone tool. So in its full incarnation, it provides basically a web front end that you can load your VNF heat template into. It provides various tests against that heat template and gives you some diagnostic information to improve the format of your heat template. So that's because there's no APIs to other projects that explain some of the NAs here. It does have code associated with it to stand up the web server and so forth, and its own instance of a repo to manage the heat templates and so forth. So there are code chunks that are in the repos. They are native containerized code. It's not built with heat. It's built with built with containers, and in this case it's built with OOM, and there should be options in OOM to let you stand up just the VPP tool. I think you can run the scripts independent of the tool as well, and I believe the testing scripts have been also run by the NFSDK folks. Because it's a standalone tool, it doesn't tie into the system integration test. But it does have some documentation associated with it in README files and published to the Read the Docs. In terms of the project activities for VVP for Casablanca, the VVP code was, this for historical purposes, VVP was originally uploaded as part of the Amsterdam release, but was never tested at that stage. We did complete some additional unit tests using the sonar and so forth to get it integrated into the Beijing release. For the Casablanca release, we were not looking for major functionality improvements. We are basically doing some updates to the validation scripts for heat to keep aligned with the corresponding platform improvements in Casablanca, and providing this annotation into the validation scripts to tie back to what's the corresponding VNF requirement. So the updates to the VNF validation scripts, but not really to the platform content. And just to give you a sense of what's going on, there are updates that have been happening, but it's not a huge activity going on at the moment. And in terms of sonar coverage, the Python scripts, the Python repos are covered by sonar, and those are all above 50%. The other ones are not covered by the sonar tooling because of the language that's used. And we seem to be running pretty smoothly in Jenkins at the moment. So let me pause there and see if there's any questions about VVP.
Actually, no question as such on what you presented. Just a question on the relationship between I've lost track of this. The relationship between VVP and CCSDK.
VNFSDK.
VNFSDK. Yes.
VNFSDK. Has a test engine and develops the Tosca tests. And because we have the integration with the Dovetail test tool, we can run the VVP test as well as part of the Linux Foundation compliance program.
So, there's, as I said, not a lot of active development in terms of the VVP as a platform. I think most of the effort is around trying to is in VNFSDK, trying to build that VNFV Dovetail platform into something more aligned with the project interest. The test scripts for heat are still maintained here under VVP. And that may be something we want to think about in future, whether it makes sense to consolidate all the test scripts in one place, separate from the tool or not. That's something we can work through. Did we answer you, Stephen?
You did. Thank you. Wasn't an issue. It's just a curiosity that the way that was linked together.
Both. Well, I think one of the comments for both VVP and VNF SDK, I'm not sure either of them are particularly well linked into the end-to-end use cases and onboarding process. That may be something we want to look at improving for Casablanca, for Dublin. Any other comments or questions on VVP? Everyone's awed and stunned, and needing more coffee.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate the presentation.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's go on next to external API. Andy, are you presenting?
No, I think Matthew's presenting.
Okay, Matthew, over to you then.
Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So for external API, there's no major changes. Only the southbound interface has been modified, a minor update, because we had the consumption of E2E service API from SO, and that's all. I'm going to present you the principle of external API. So nothing has changed here except that we have different TMF API, service catalog, service ordering, service inventory, and we have added a new API which concerns kind of listener, which is the hub API. In fact, this API allows client to subscribe to notification, to receive some notification when service order or service order item change inside the system. So the client does not need to poll. It will receive an event which will contain data about the service order or service order item and the type of the event. So in order to receive those notifications, the client need to expose an API, the hub API, an API we have defined as a Swagger file. So the service catalog interface is nothing the same, service ordering interface is the same, and inventory also. And the hub interface, the client will create a hub, which is a subscription about what you want to observe, and so that you will receive an event later when something occurs. If it is not clear, let me know, because I'm not very fluent in English, so don't hesitate to interrupt me and to ask some questions. Thank you. So the new feature we have added also is thanks to Adrian and his team from Huawei. It's the service instantiation with the E2E orchestration request. Here, we have the service specification, which is the catalog, the service order, which is service ordering. And here, the new hub API, which will be offered for subscription to observe some event. And on the south, we still have the call to SDC, AI, and to SO, we have two APIs that we are consuming, which is E2E service instance for long duration service, and also service instance. So the new one that we are consuming is E2E service instance. Here we have only a service order, and to switch between one or the other, we have a special attribute in the service order request that allows us to switch between one or the other. Any question maybe about that?
Yes. This part is, sorry, when you switch, what do you mean by switch? I haven't been following this closely. Mm-hmm. Why you switch?
Because in order to fulfill a special use case, I'm sorry, I'm not completely aware of the mechanism behind, but when some kind of service are ordered, contains a special attribute which comes from the service specification, we switch to the service instances to fulfill the service instantiation through service orchestrator. And this concern, I know that this concern only long duration service. I think that they are involved in the use case is the use case is the major use cases that are offered by ONAP. I think it is for instance vFirewall, I guess. Let me see later if it is okay. No, it's not detailed here. I can using this orchestration. Okay, there's no detail about kind of service that are orchestrated through the E2E SO API, but I can get this information.
Let me just understand. In the Casablanca release, mm-hmm. if you have a non-ONAP, a partner provider, and then of course the ONAP provider, so the external API could be used for that scenario for service orchestration federation or no? In Casablanca.
In Casablanca, external client, application which will consume one app, can use service ordering, and they do not need to know if we will use E2E service fulfillment or the service API, the other service API from SO. I don't know if I understand well your question. But,
we had this discussion that you can probably leverage on an API like interlude, like an API between the partner provider and the ONAP provider. Is that feature is available in Casablanca release or is it still for a future release?
It's not clear for me. I don't. When you speak about ONAP provider and about a partner provider,
you use something like interlude, For example.
So Parvin, we're exploring use cases that would apply interlude, like CCVPN, for example, potentially. But I don't think the external APIs. The actual definition of the APIs won't change. It's the application of that API across a different situation or different scope, like Legato, which is BSSOSS interactions versus interlude. I believe we're still, if we apply an interleaved use case, it's going to be very limited and still apply the same serverless ordering API as defined.
So you're saying that, Andy, if the platform, when it's ready, the provider, the partner provider can make a good use of it to interact with the ONAP provider in terms of service ordering and more, yeah? Based on whatever is in the scope for interlude, yeah?
Right. We might need to look at how do you apply security, how do you limit the scope of what's being requested, et cetera. But there's things like that that have to be applied, but the actual API definition, such as a service ordering API, shouldn't really change. It's just how it's used and the scope that it's applied across. But you would need additional security validation type things.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. So about the service catalog, there's nothing has changed since Benjing, the same API. For the service ordering, so we have that special switch which we will allow to use one or the other SO API. But the service ordering API doesn't change on the north. It's the same. Okay. About the service entry, there's no change. It's the same API. The Swagger is still the same. And about the most important new feature is the notification management subscription. As I said previously, which allow some partner or external application to subscribe or unsubscribe to external API notification. It is very simple. You just have to register a callback URL and a query about the kind of event you want to observe, and so you will receive each time an event occurs of that type, you will receive an event with an ID, time, and the type of the event, and also part of the service order, which has been concerned, you will receive this event through an API that the partner need to expose. All these API are described as a Swagger file, and they are available in the wiki, the Swagger file. We will put the Swagger inside the code, of course, and they will be available through read the doc on app read the doc. They are already inside the yes. Here I can show you. Okay, here are the JSON file corresponding to the Swagger. So here we have the service order. And here the listener, the Swagger concerning the hub API. Well, that's all. In fact, there's no major changes except that we offer now a subscription and for events, and that we consume on the south another API from SO. Do you have more question about that?
No. Thank you, Matthew. I appreciate it.
Maybe I can.
Sure.
So if you want some details, maybe we can dive into the specification. For instance, for the hub, to create a hub, for instance, you just post a query with your callback URL where you will receive the event, okay? And the query with the event type. I want to observe event type, service order, state change, notification. So there are some, there's a list of event types you can observe, okay? And this is the response. You get an ID, it's a resource creation of a hub, okay? And you can retrieve a hub and delete a hub, okay? And when the event occurs, you will receive that kind of structure, okay? Event, event type, and the event with some data corresponding to the order which has been from which the state has changed, either as creation or modification, etc. Well, okay, this time that's all.
Great, thank you. Any final questions for Matthew? Okay, thank you. I appreciate your presentation.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay, let's move on next to Parviz. So now that we've concluded all of our project reviews, we're going to start talking about planning for Dublin. So I'm going to turn it over to Parviz next for a Tiger Team report, and then we're going to kick off the Dublin brainstorming. Parviz, over to you.
Thank you, Chris. Okay, folks, we had a kind of Tiger Team report back in July, late July, and then this is between the last call and this one. We had the Monday meetings, weekly meetings. We have like four meetings, so we see what we covered over the last 4 weeks, okay? As I reported back in July 31st, the ARC call, we talked about the generic network controller architecture, the interface mapping. We said that it will be split in two parts. The part that has to do with release 4 and beyond, for Dublin and beyond, that's, of course, work in progress. For Casablanca, that has already been captured. Chris, you already updated the architecture. I agreed to remove all references to VFC for now. But then new contributions are needed to address how to align the generic network function controller and VFC. And we are actually waiting for contribution from the VFC team. For the SDNR, as I mentioned last time, for Casablanca is already captured, whether it's a POC or some other experiments. But for R4, the architecture update has to happen for the SDNR, since it's already based on the SDNC functions, plus some random specific functionalities. So this could be one of the topics that we can tackle during the release 4 timeframe. For the recursive service orchestration, the first item has already been taken care of, defining all the internal and external interfaces with the API mapping. We call them like OI and OE's, internal and external. And the details, could you mute, please? Chris, something is happening. Okay, details are captured in a few slides as part of this report. Now, the SDK-driven subsystem approach, we still have a number of the slides that are available for review for the Dublin time frame. Of course, this is linked to the CC SDK and the personas that we have been talking about, whether the common libraries used for CC SDK and the persona for SDNC, APC and VFC and other controllers. For the Dublin release, we are going to come back to the foundation of the presentation, actually, was given by the AT&T team. for microservices architecture team, there is a small team that is in place. We are planning to prepare a draft architecture contribution, Chris, for your upcoming ARC face-to-face meeting in mid-October. This is a small team that we are working on, hopefully, to prepare a proposal for the face-to-face meeting. This team is being established. Alex, Steve, and others are like Nigel, Manoj, Dave, myself, and we are thinking that we invite the key PTLs before we go to your face-to-face meeting, Chris. We are hoping that you can have a contribution ready for that meeting, okay? For the orchestration function, as I reported last time, Gil from AT&T had a very comprehensive proposal. He went through the set of functions that we expect from orchestration, different like the background material, the SDC modeling tools, how it's used for different scenarios. It was basically capturing the homing instantiation aspects with some detailed sequence diagrams. The slide deck is available on the wiki page. As I said last time, it's a very comprehensive set of slides, about 90 plus slides that you can really read and understand what's going on. There are two separate modeling approaches called modeling approach A and B. For A, the interaction between the low, higher order and lower order service is direct. So there is no isolation between the layers, the two service layers that interact directly. However, for modeling approach B, this is where that there has been a lot of discussion that how you can shield the detail of the lower order service from the higher order. And Gil brought up the concept of facade and the facade object and facade API. So I'm going to give some details about that. So as part of the nested services that we have captured even during the Beijing this discussion on orchestration, we identified some of the issues that perhaps for certain service scenarios we need to capture in terms of functional decomposition, homing, and service instantiation. The facade resource was defined by Gil's presentation, and we are going to use that concept in the Dublin timeframe to see how we can leverage that for specifically for example, for Vodafone SODO service scenario. Okay, this discussion is going on. This is where, in one of the slides that is captured in Gil's presentation, as you can see on the red box, he talked about the facade resource approach. So you can look into the detail of the hierarchical kind of structure for the orchestration. Within the orchestration execution engine, you can see there is a service level and the resource level orchestration. Previously, there was a loopback. It's called the OI7 in the architecture, the overall architecture for internal structure of the orchestration. But now with the notion of the facade resource, the idea is that we can remove that. And instead, we can have a link between the resource level orchestration directly with the API handler, and that is the so-called label as OI8. So the interface 8 can replace the interface 7. This is the scope of this proposal, and so you're going to get into the detail in follow-up meetings that how we can leverage the facade resource in defining some new services or service scenarios like SODO in Vodafone case. The again, in this picture, if you have the service W, there was a huge discussion on this. If you have a service W at the high order service trying to use the resources associated with service X, so if you bring the notion of facade, you basically hide the detail of the service X from service W. So the idea here is just to view service X, the entirety of the service X as a network function. So now when the service is ordered, the service W will view service X as a network function, as simple as that. So how you really shield that through the facade API or object, that is the detail is provided in Gil's presentation. So this is the, after one of the calls, you see that service X in the lower part of the report, it's a service X in this example uses facade, but the facade is only a wrapper that makes the service X to appear as a resource to service W. I believe that there was some exchange, email exchange with Susanna Vodafone. There are general agreement that the notion of facade and keeping the detail of service X hidden from service W is already agreed, at least a rough consensus on that. Now, how we can leverage this by adding new VNFs, even PNFs, in any service scenario during the Dublin timeframe, that is the work in progress. And we are hoping that we can use the Vodafone SODO scenario to really show the value of this facade resource that is captured in the AT&T proposal, okay? So then the other aspects that mentioned in this proposal is the module orchestration, the homing, as I mentioned, and also the complex service scenarios. And there is the separation of concern captured in two separate options. As you can see, as part of the ONAP runtime support, there are two options. The ONAP can support the application level configuration, is listed as option one, versus the option two that OSS PSS support the application level configuration. So this was at some extent debated technically in detail. And then one of the conclusions was that the ONAP runtime support should allow a service provider to either plug in a VNF manager or not. So the provider should be able to just use an independent or external VNF manager instead of going through the normal ONAP process, which is the SO and the generic VNF manager. There is a contribution coming on in the Dublin timeframe to make a good use of this VNF manager that is not tied to the ONAP, SO, or VNF manager internal interactions. Okay. There was also the notion of the network service versus the ETSI notion of the network service. There is a difference that Gil mentioned. We are going to define an object type by bringing this into the discussion. We are going to define a generic network service as opposed to the ETSI notion of the network service that is already captured as part of the service and information model in ETSI. Okay? So there is a recent proposal by Netcracker. They are trying to use the ONAP mapping to domain orchestrator concept. They are trying to define. Yeah.
Sorry, a quick point on the previous slide. I believe there are some efforts to also integrate OF into the VFC path, just like SO path.
Yeah. I'm not providing all the details, but that discussion also came up. But for Dublin, we are waiting for more detailed proposal. You already have one, which was discussed in any of the projects, Ramki, or?
No, I think Srini can also speak more if he's there. So at least what we're trying to do is from an API level and a policy level, we're trying to make sure that, you know, the VFC path and the SO path, you know, basically there is symmetry, right, in with respect to OOF,
okay,
the type of policies, the author, and how the APIs communicate, because that's the most critical piece to get started. So
Okay, sure. Sure, I'll, I know that that discussion came up, but the detail is we need a concrete contribution.
And the context is basically HPA and also the intent feature, which are all very similar. Yeah, sort of that's the, you know, starting point for us. Yeah.
There is a slide that I'll come to that in the context of multi-cloud, maybe you can chime in. So the domain orchestrator, there is a huge discussion, Chris and the team, the architecture team. Avinash from Netcracker, for the last two of the four meetings, we have been grappling with the idea of that DO versus end-to-end SO. What is the scope of DO and what constitutes the scope of end-to-end SO? So we have been going back and forth, and we are trying to get a group agreement on whether the DO means the technology aspects like IP optical or geographical aspects. If the multi-site like service scenario, do you really focus on the geographical distribution aspects of the service scenario or the technology aspects or a combination of both, okay? So Avinash has put together a very nice slide deck, but we haven't been able to really clear the definition of DO versus end-to-end SO. We are working on this. We have already spent 2 hours over the last 4 weeks. We are hoping that in coming weeks we can resolve the definition of these two terms, and we can link this to the AT&T proposal that Gil presented, and hopefully we can make something ready during the Dublin timeframe. But then Avinash has also focused on the role of the OSS PSS. If indeed there is a greenfield operation versus the brownfield or the legacy operation, those are the aspects that is also linked to the DOSO. And we didn't have enough time to go through the detail of this. For example, I can bring this here. The agenda for the last meeting was in section one. Avinash wanted to do the DO concept using the context of deployment challenges. There was another section, section two, the transformation, how to achieve multi-DO ecosystem using ONAP, which we didn't have time to cover. And the last section is the proposal for ONAP API alignment with respect to DO and SO ecosystem and how we're going to leverage that in ONAP. So these are the topics for upcoming calls, Chris. Then I guess the last part was Ranki. This is an action item for the multi-cloud team to get into the detail of how the ONAP through the multi-cloud layer is going to interact with the infrastructure component. There was a detailed discussion with Vimal and the Tiger team that do we really need to hide the detail of the underlay controller, overlay controller, and gateway controller from the ONAP? Should we really just expose some of the objects that is cloud-related once the OOF and SO, when they kind of identify the cloud region and the cloud provider, then through the blue line here, that the exchange should capture some of the key information, and the details should be hidden from the ONAP operation altogether, from orchestration, from SDNC, and from other controllers. So the idea is we need to revisit a split of this overlay, underlay, and gateway controller, the functionality, and see how much of that should be visible to the ONAP through the multi-cloud mediation layer. Okay.
Certainly, Parviz. I think I mean both models have their own merit. So basically, in some cases, the declarative model will be perfect, works great. I mean, and if for some private clouds, specific use cases, if the operator wants more fine-grained control, that's sort of where this comes up. You know, we couldn't proceed much on that details, the implementation details in R3 with respect to this, but definitely we can chat more. So there are specific use cases that this value, but I do completely agree that there is also a declarative API where basically all this doesn't matter. It's just a high level API, right?
We also talked about Raghu and I, you were not on that call, but we also talked about it's possible to say you can classify your APIs for different functions you are performing. These are resource API, these are telemetry API, these are networking API, these are discovery API. But we focus on API, and to us, everything else is a black box. And we don't, so you can have a class of API, and that this blue arrow we are showing here can be broken into little four blue arrows, saying that these APIs are for resource orchestration, these APIs for telemetry, for discovery, and for networking. But we don't know anything beyond that.
No, that's perfect, Vimal. Yeah. Now, I was thinking exactly the same, and by the way, this is more exemplary, right? Even in the slides when we talked about this, example to illustrate the point, right? Otherwise, people get lost how that can come. Where do you get that information from? That's all.
Rather than putting label, if you say a logical box is called networking, something that does a networking overlay and something that does resources orchestration. I think that is more acceptable. What is the reason why I kind of didn't like this slide is because I get the impression, and sometimes people ask the question, are we going to support this SDNC? Is this going to support this OC and UC and GC? And I said, no, we are, this is outside ONAP. That's nothing to do with ONAP. It's the cloud resources that we just consume. Mm-hmm. And that's the part I need to make sure that we...
Vimal, as I mentioned during the discussion, the targeting discussion, for even in release one, for the Volt use case, you're right. We did not really link the detail of the third-party controller, would be underlay, overlay, or gateway controller. We did not want to really make that part of the ONAP.
That's right.
You're right. And then... there was a trick that within the SDNC, for example, there is something called the configuration node. It's a part of the DG. So that configuration node is going to adapt to third-party controller adapter, and that doesn't have to be even visible to ONAP. That could be done through the vendor who is bringing their controller with a bunch of the VNFs that they are going to deploy. So that adapter should take care of that with the DG config node. Yeah. ONAP doesn't have to do much. You're right. But that's only a Volt use case. Ramki, for Dublin and future releases, we need to formalize this. We need to see, as Vimal said, the blue line. Are we going to really have a single API or a group of APIs for different cloud providers? How we are going to really unify those?
It wasn't different cloud providers so much, Parviz, and we can explain and we can talk during the targeting meeting. What I was saying is that this blue line between ONAP, MAC, MEC, and cloud provider, there are four classes, four different kind of type of things I'm doing. I'm collecting telemetry, I'm doing discovery, I'm doing resource allocation, and I'm requesting some network configuration. We can have those four, the blue lines, clearly grouping those APIs in those four buckets. And that's all. But what those APIs, how those APIs get translated to each cloud provider would be the MEC's responsibility.
Okay. Chris, I guess this discussion is going to happen in the Tiger team in coming weeks. However, the major topic that we are... tackling as part of the Dublin release. I don't know the plan after the subcommittee elections, but those three major topics should be on the agenda for Dublin, as I mentioned. This is one of them.
Yeah.
There are the other two that I mentioned. The Netcracker proposal and AT&T, the facade resources idea, and how we can leverage on that on SODO service federation scenario.
Sure, I'm going to touch on that next.
and then we can cover, you know, the key themes, and we'll have to talk about it and plan it through the rest of the cycle, through the rest of the year.
And also wanted to add that these are also key topics for Ed. So basically, we'll be working closely together across the discussion groups, you know, Tiger team and the Edge functional requirements.
Oh, yeah, Edge is another topic. Yeah.
Steven?
But it's very closely, this is all very closely related. So.
Okay.
Steven, you had a question?
So the rest of the package,
wait, just
on.
A second.
Yeah, I do. We just be careful when you talked about the STNR earlier. You were creating confusion with that and diverging from what I recall of the discussions. But what I think, though, of course, is we have this persona related, and we have to answer the question of how we want this to work within the ONAP perspective in terms of which personas we want to exemplify. And using use cases and using integration, and then what's the related project
you
need for that?
Yeah, I have a tier somewhere.
Stephen, I agree. I tried not to use word STNR at all. And I just said we have controller CCSDK, and what persona we create within ONAP is something that is more generic, not tied to any particular technology or any particular. And we might
just Yes.
I know. Yes, agreed. I was just going back to the slides earlier that were mentioning it quite a lot.
Okay. I guess this is one of the slides that is on the backup section. All right. Good point, Steve. Chris, I don't know how much time we have, but this was my summary of the last four meetings.
Okay. We have a few more minutes. If there are any more comments, questions.
Hey, Chris, this is Shaker. So, Praviz, so how do we, this is all good information, right? So how do we take all this information that you presented and basically get an agreement from the entire team, from the larger team, as to how do we transform it into a set of requirements that can be implemented within the next release? Or the next couple of releases.
Yeah, it's go ahead, Parviz.
Okay, here is my actually I already talked about this during the Tiger Team discussion. As you mentioned, the requirement. So the requirement should drive the architecture options and the API design process and the use case, the scenarios that we are targeting for the Dublin and future releases. Now, the requirement, in my mind, should come from the operators. I have repeatedly asked the operators if they foresee any use case that is going to drive the architecture enhancements for Dublin and beyond. Shaker, I'm still Vodafone, Verizon, AT&T, and Orange. They already said that they plan to bring some requirement. For example, Vodafone says for SODO. They have a set of requirements. There has been some discussion offline. I guess Gil is on the call. Gil and Susanna and others, they are already talking about what common set of requirements they need to bring in to drive the architecture evolution or architecture enhancements.
Okay, so, that's the first step. So let me chime in from the architecture subcommittee perspective.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to be doing over the next, say, 6 months until we get to M0 and M1, trying to take this, come up with the key themes for the committee, and then try to work to agreement on some of the topics that we identify. And there's a lot of good thinking behind this deck and that the Tiger team has been doing that we should use to influence and make sure that we get consensus across the whole team to drive it forward so that, this is long-term. We won't necessarily get to everything long-term in the Dublin release, but we should be able to take some of them based on key priorities. And make sure that we have steps in place to move in this direction.
Chris, the main theme for Dublin, you mentioned global scalability or something of that nature, yeah?
I'll talk about that in the next presentation.
It's just
my thoughts at this point. I want people to put in comments and shape this into something that we're all happy with.
Hey, Chris. So the essence of my question was, are we going to, is this a proposal, what Pravis just presented, is this the roadmap for the Dublin release and beyond? Or is this, or are these ideas that would need to be voted on to make sure, to see if they become part of the future roadmap?
We need to get to consensus to have it as part of the roadmap. That's what the Tiger team is trying to do, is to have some of these deeper discussions and then come back to the architecture subcommittee once this has been boiled down to a point where we can bring it in and have consensus.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with what we do for the Dublin release, is it's going to be a consensus-based process that we want to make sure. At this point, we're in the proposal stage. We want to make sure that by the time we get to M0, we have a pretty good handle on where we're going.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I should stop sharing then. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Pravis. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So let me switch over. Okay, can everybody see this?
Yes, I can.
Yep. Okay. Great. Now it's time to talk about the Dublin release. I put together a few initial thoughts just to spur discussion. As I mentioned, I want to, as a group, capture the theme and key topics for discussion through the end of the year. Like we did with Casablanca, I'd like to brainstorm a list and then work on it through the subsequent calls. We can schedule a set of presentations as we go forward. So what follows is based on the ongoing discussions within the subcommittee and within the Tiger team. Everything that follows is a discussion point at this point, not a decision. I designed it to be a little bit provocative and a little bit further than we're likely to go. To elicit feedback. I don't want, what I found in the past is if I come to a meeting and say, what are we going to do? Then usually it's quiet. And if I come in, put something that's close to right, then everybody nods their heads and says, yeah, that's right. So I want to make sure that I have some of it in there that's wrong. So that the people will say, no, no, you got,
you're looking for trouble, Chris.
Exactly.
You're looking for trouble.
Exactly. So I'm going to put together or show a couple of slides on some initial thoughts. Then I want everybody to give feedback and we can start refining this and brainstorm a list of topics for the next several calls. Dublin release focus, I think we should call it global scalability. Personally, I think that some of the things that we need to focus on are the operator adoption, like we did the deployability from this release, and make sure that it's flexible can fit in multiple operator environments. Also, we have the continuous improvement in technical debt, including the S3P features that we're still working on. To move forward with some of the future architecture concepts that are coming forward are cloud native.
you know, if we look at these as three circles to focus on, you know, sometimes the interesting things come out in the boundaries. And this is where the topic list that Parviz was just presenting comes in. You know, some of the high priority items, I think, are federation between different operators. Also, the delegation between different levels of orchestrators. If we have the service orchestrator, and then if we have to hand down either geographically or from a technology perspective to subordinate domain orchestrators, you know, continuing with the discussion about modularity and standards alignment. And here's one of the provocative points is geo-redundancy, that if we're going to go for global scalability, perhaps now is the time to think about the survivability and the redundancy across the global infrastructure. For the next circle, the boundary is the microservices infrastructure, functional decomposition and harmonization that we've been discussing, and then security and ID management. And then the cloud native and operator adoption comes into the service mesh and continuing the support for the container VNFs or CNFs, in-service upgrades, and edge cloud. And I'm going to pause here, and I'd like initial feedback on these circles and the general theme. Is that moving in the right direction, or would people like to see changes?
Hey, Chris, I'll kick off the discussion. I have a couple of thoughts, right? So, So I think from an owner perspective, we need to get to the point where the entire framework is actually deployable out of the box, right? So all the ideas that you have there that you've listed are great ideas, no question about it. But unless a service provider can basically go to the repository, pull all the components out of the repository and deploy them in an environment where the environment is a working environment, I think it'll be a challenge for us to move forward in 2019, you know, in Dublin and beyond. We have to get to a point where there is a deployable set of components within ONAP that provide a minimum functionalities that anyone can basically access and deploy in their own environment and get it working up and running. And then we can, you know, a possibility would be, you know, once you get to that point, then you start to add all these functionalities and services on top of it. But unless we get to a point where there is a base platform that can be deployed from the repository, I think it's going to be a little bit of a challenge for everybody to get a feel as to how useful ONAP is going to be in their own environment.
So that's my top circle. Are there changes that you would suggest to that, or are there different topics that you covered to support that?
So maybe there is a slightly different way to actually look at this. I would actually say cloud native solves exactly the problems what Shankar is bringing about. I mean, basically, I'm not saying anything and everything, but quite a few of those, right? I mean, that's sort of the one of the key themes behind service mesh, you know, offering infrastructure functions, or when you go about, you know, truly cloud native, right? So it's another way to look at this problem, right? I mean, basically, we're changing the game. I mean, for example, clearly, when you moved over from sort of OpenStack-based clouds to Kubernetes for ONAP deployment, I think of really as that as a game changer. Yeah. I mean, basically, the same concept you can apply for network functions also and push the industry in that direction. You know, that's another way to go about this.
So how would you change this?
Sorry, Chris, let me give you another example, right? And I agree with Ramke, right? But my comment is actually more basic than this. So in today's environment, and I think many of us can relate to it, in today's environment, you try to, you propose a use case, and you realize that the use case requires a slightly different data model. Then it becomes a challenge of how do you introduce the changes to the data model in order for us to support that use case. I'm talking about a basic fundamental flexibility features that give the flexibility to the platform to be able to adapt to new use cases that have not been addressed yet, and yet they impact the basic premise of the platform, which happens to be the data model. So unless we address the flexibility at how the service can, how we can create the service in a generic way, I think whatever we do at the back end of the platform is not going to be too helpful, because we won't be able to address use cases or new use cases.
Your point is well taken. I tried to capture that, you know, in that top circle and then the cloud native circle. But are there different ways that we should present it, or are there different things that we should call out here that I haven't already listed?
So my vote is to actually move sort of, the service mesh container, other than the edge cloud, to me, all other bullets sort of fall right in the middle. Edge cloud is more edge specific, but basically, if you're saying cloud native is solving several of the key challenges which you're facing, right? Then it should rightfully move to the center, right? The service mesh, container, VNFs, and in-service upgrades.
So you think
edge cloud, of course, you should keep it separate, I guess, because that's more edge specific, right? We could say keep the same older classification.
So something more like this?
Yes, I'm inclined to think that way. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Other thoughts?
I wonder whether, Shaka had a point, and is that covered under, how to, because we are in a way, when we're sort of taking these use cases and showing the use cases and so on, sometimes doing a little bit of hard coding of the logic for the use cases instead of sort of building it flexibly into a platform. And you've seen that with scaling and so on there. And maybe that's not necessarily an architecture as such, but maybe it's maybe it's under the technical debt there. But it is worth trying to dig into and that, investigate that a little bit, I think. That was one thing I wanted to say. Another thing there, I know we talk about service mesh and cloud native and all that wonderful stuff, but there are performance considerations related to this as well. And I wonder how we should sort of address that.
So fair point, Steve. I think even if we take an existing approach, right, for example, using a client library for sort of distributed tracing, right, there is a performance tax to it, right? It's only a question of, what is the additional tax due to sort of a sidecar container. From the two approaches, right? One is, the deployment flexibility it brings in, I think, trumps a lot of those considerations. Then after that, there is also a solid community work in making sure that sidecar is as optimal as possible, right? From an implementation standpoint, use the right, programming paradigms like Rust, I believe, which is even more optimized than, C++ or, and also sort of the right based runtimes like, Alpine Linux and all those, right? That work is in progress in the community. I'm with you on, the performance aspect, but I think there is a ton of work happening in the community to sort of address those given the deployment flexibility this brings in, right? Correct.
Okay, a couple of points, Chris. On the model creation alignment, I guess what Shakar said is the key. However, we don't want to really bring the a big bag of those data models and try to somehow do the proper parsing or translation to make ONAP to adapt to that environment. Instead, I think we need to unify the data models by all means. I don't know, there are techniques that in industry, people, they can unify different data models using probably some metadata unification. Today we have like Tosca or Heat or Yang or whatever that we have today, which forced all kind of parsing in the previous releases. What we can do to avoid that? Can we unify those data models? Can you put that as the unification of data models or no?
How about this? We want a model-driven system and we want unified data models?
Unified data models.
Does that capture all your thoughts?
But then, Ramki, to your point, we should walk before we run. Speaking of cloud native, it's great. There are a set of tools that are available for us to use. However, we are inheriting this legacy baggage from ONAP. We have to take this baggage, some surgical operation, remove some of these bags, and bring some new, I don't know, microservices. And when we have a sizable set of those nice microservices, then we can leverage the Istio or service mesh to make a good use of the cloud native tools. But we have to do in that order. We cannot jump into the lake of the tools that are available in CNCF and say, oh, this is great. We can choose.
No,
we have to do this. Yeah, okay.
No, definitely good point, Parviz, but I think there are two distinct aspects here. One is, I think, we're talking about service mesh containerized VNS in the context of workloads, right, for ONAP. The other part is like sort of, you know, I think service mesh for the ONAP management plane. Both have their basically distinct aspects to be looked at independently, I would say, right? How it brings value, right? Both are separate. I mean, you should not try to combine them.
So,
Chris.
Go ahead. Sorry,
yeah. Three point topics. Actually, I don't know. This is just sort of provocative, maybe as well.
You're only allowed to.
No, there's 15 minutes. I can use 5 minutes. So the first one is maybe we need to actually work a little bit on. This is just pure architectural stuff. It's a bit of terminology and agreement around. Around the architecture, what do you call the service, what do you call the resource, blah, 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 all those things. That's one topic there. Another topic is a little bit of a question, and that is, do we need to go in the direction of some type of data layer? I mean, we have, or data management layer, and we have a start of that maybe with music, I don't know. But we have different databases, different technologies in different projects, and maybe this comes under the modularization somehow there. But it could be something to look at. Does it make sense to offer this as a service towards the projects that we could streamline this a little bit there? And the final one maybe is a little bit functional. Maybe I'm not sure. But what about the orchestration of container-based VNFs? Should that be maybe a use case?
I put that over here. We can move it if there's a better place for it. Maybe it's not in the middle, but it goes in the by edge cloud between cloud native and operator adoption.
Okay, I missed it. Very good. Okay, thanks, Chris. And then, I'm going to go to four. Should we also look when it comes to this around the capabilities related to sort of leveraging or enhancing the capabilities with Tosca, or is that use case driven there?
So that's kind of where I was going with the standards alignment, but if we want to put something else in, is there a different way to phrase this?
I guess as under standards alignment, there could be a few different sub bullets. We can flesh that out a bit later, maybe. Okay. Now I'll let Shaka have a go if he hasn't forgotten what he wanted to say.
No, I haven't forgotten it. Good points. So I want to go back to a point that I made earlier, right? So all these points that we have over here are great points, no question about it. They have to almost, they're the standards, or they have to be part of any model-driven platform. But to me, the key for all these bullets is to support the service creation.
Uh-huh.
Without the ability for us to have a flexible way to create a service, these functions would be rendered, I don't want to say useless, but not too useful. So the question is, the entry point is, how can I use the data model driven architecture to allow for different and distinct services to be created without a significant changes to the platform?
Mm-hmm.
So whether it is container based, whether I'm using Kubernetes to do the orchestration, whether I'm using Tosca or Heat, doesn't really matter. These are tools that allow you to create the service. The initial entry point there are two entry points. One is the VNF SDK, which allows me to define VNFs in a standard way to use for my service. And the second is, how do I create the service? And I'm talking about, how do I create the artifacts and all the steps to orchestrate the service? Everything else that you have here is a supporting cast. So to me, it should be, and again, we're being provocative over here. To me, how can we, as a community, create a set of standards that would allow us to create any service without major changes, without making any or requiring significant changes to either the service design and creation or the data modeling or to the rest of the platform?
Okay, Shaker, do you agree that that should be handled above the data model? So the true so-called the information model or service layer model or whatever you call it, that layer is missing or is incomplete in ONAP, correct?
Well, I mean, I don't want to, I want to pick on one use case, right? If I go to do a use case and I realize that the existing data model doesn't support a specific data type, regardless of how good of the components, the underlying components are, I'm stuck.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Can we elevate this thinking here? We are stuck with this bunch of data models up until now. We have three releases. I don't know, maybe I'm running behind the time here, but the layer above that, the true abstraction at the service layer, do we have the necessary tools, as you said, that you can leverage on that layer in a very technology agnostic manner to create any service that you want? Because you have to have that layer. That layer is missing. Okay? I call it a service / information model or something that is full abstraction, which would basically drive the definition of the data model. That is not there in ONAP today. Okay, Chris, you should probably capture if there is an agreement. Yeah,
I think that's right in here, or at least that's the that's my attempt.
No, the model-driven we can just limit ourselves to data models. But what is missing in ONAP today is what Shaker is talking about. The abstraction layer that has nothing to do with the infrastructure, with the set of technologies that we use, that layer is missing. We need to capture that. Is that information slash service model? It's not a data model. I guess it's called information slash service model or something.
Okay. So does that capture it for now? If we just say we want an abstraction layer to deploy any service without significant code changes?
Yeah, I think it does. Thank you.
Okay.
So yeah, was Shaka, was your point that there should be another round thing on here that describes model driven, or was your point that it should be a bullet item? Go ahead.
So my point, and again, right, I don't want to belabor the point, but my point is that we're focusing on the platform components, and I'm not suggesting that we are losing sight, but the feeling that I have is, and I'm giving you an example based on my experience, that every time we need to add a new service, and if that service requires some tweaking to the upfront systems, then it becomes an issue. Right? So regardless of whether I have a great service mesh architecture, regardless of whether, you know, the VNF is containerized or not, regardless of whether I have geo redundancy, I have to be able to create a service. I need to have a flexibility to create a set of services without requiring significant changes to either the data modeling infrastructure or the upfront systems, as the service design and creation, the orchestration, so on and so forth.
So let's spend a couple of minutes then putting some words around what we call the theme. We called Casablanca deployability, so we probably shouldn't use that again. But to get to what you're talking about, the way that I would term it is global scalability, that we want operators to be able to adopt ONAP, to roll it out in their networks, and then to be able to essentially scale it, not just for one use case, but for all their operations? Or do we want to call it maybe global operations?
Chris, do we have to change this theme every 6 months? I mean, this is an oil tanker, not a sports car, so it's not very good for taking corners here.
Well, I think there's a release theme that helps to do prioritization for the release. I don't think that we're redeveloping ONAP every 6 months.
If you change the focus every 6 months, then it's a little bit tricky. So isn't the why isn't the theme still deployability?
Part of it's marketing. Part of it is that I'm going to get asked by Linux Foundation about what's the theme of the release, so that they can help push it.
Then your job's easy if you say it's the same.
but then we don't really change the platform. I mean, the Beijing release, we did S3P. We did, and we kept doing. That doesn't say we're dropping that. But if we just focused on performance ad nauseum, then we'd have a great performing platform that wouldn't work in everybody's environment. So then we added in, we understand that we need to make this more flexible to work in operator environments. And we called that deployability. And that brought in some of the modularity. Some of the new architectures haven't been brought in, and we're coming across some of these issues about how do we roll out services on a global basis. So I think we want to capture those updates, those changes. A lot of these bullets should have been topics that we've been talking about for months and months, but we probably do want to address the fact that that we're making progress, and that there are some some updates that we need to do in terms of where we go with this.
But Chris, the problem is that if you say that we our Dublin theme is, you know, our Casablanca theme was deployability, and if you change it somehow, it gives the impression that we achieved deployability. And I think that might be slightly misconstrued. I wish I can say it's achieved. Yeah. And therefore, I think if you say it's an evolution to say scalable deployability is the Dublin theme, that means it's carry forward all the things that we did in Beijing and Dublin and Casablanca and right. improved on them.
Yeah. So that was why I wanted to put it in one of these circles, because, you know, just like S3P, deployability has to be a continuous improvement thing that we keep going with. It's yeah. not one and done. You know, I think that the Dublin release has to be bigger than just you know, what we did. You know, I think that we need to take the feedback that we've heard. We need to take some of the items that we've been working on that we didn't get into Casablanca, and then put that into Dublin, and then communicate out what the difference is.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying that if you use the word, instead of operation, say scalable, or maybe use the word global deployability, then it says global scalable deployable deployment.
I know this is marketing, Chris, but I actually think it's more destructive than helpful to keep changing this every 6 months. It just confuses.
And I think so, Steve. I think if you what Chris now has, global scalable deployment, it kind of an incremental improvement carry forward the Beijing and Casablanca releases, was make it more scalable, stable, and make it more deployable.
So Vimal, so or Chris or anybody, should we be doing a postmortem? On the use cases are the most critical, because they drive they validate the infrastructure, right? So should we, like, after each release, for example, do post-mortem on a use case, let's say 5G use case or CCVPN use case, and basically highlight the lessons learned and how can they be avoided in the next release?
I think it's definitely worth circling back. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges with that is that the release won't be complete until November. And even if we say code freeze is a month from now, you know, we won't have a lot of the lessons learned until you know, sometime in October. We want to make progress in the meantime. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to at least have you know, some topics that we've all identified as high priority that we want to discuss in more detail and start planning around, and then be able to feed in the lessons learned as they become available.
So the one of the, at least the lessons learned, I think probably we should really more seriously think about is there was a last minute change in priority on the several functional requirements, which led to a lot of confusion because, you know, companies had, you know, found certain types of resources matching, I mean, certain skill sets for solving certain problems. And later when things changed, I mean, basically everybody was running around. I mean, I also personally faced that problem in finding the right resource. It was a real challenge. So maybe we should make sure that thing never happens again, sort of, you know, the last minute reprioritization, you know, get the priorities yearly right to the end user advisory committee across the board, right? You know, architecture, implement, you know, functional requirements or use cases, and then, you know, put it all together very early on.
So which requirements are you specifically referring to?
So specifically, for example, so early on, Chris, when we were discussing several functional requirements, so once you had a full plan, at least the thought process was, I mean, basically you went through the discussion with the end user advisory committee, mm-hmm. then the takeaway was it is fully approved. But later, you know, hey, we are running out of resources, and then some reprioritization happened, and Edge specifically got pulled, and Edge and even 5G, both of them got like completely lower in priority. You know, so that was, it came as a nasty surprise in the last minute, right? So the key point is like, why do this? I mean, basically, if we have gone through the analysis before, then we should be ready to commit to it, right? You know.
Yeah. Well, one thing on that, and this goes for everybody, is that formal approval really comes from the projects themselves, and they have limited developers. And so it's important to talk to the PTLs early for whatever the requirements are. You know, the leadership levels can really only say no. They can't say yes because they don't have the resource pools to push onto any particular project, you know, beyond where companies commit. So this is where it's important to work by influence and get the PTLs on board early. But your point is well taken, that the earlier we can form our thoughts, and the earlier that we can present this to the PTLs, the more likely we are to get it adopted in the next release.
No, exactly. I think in this specific case, what happened is, though the PTLs are lined up, but the problem is then suddenly, as an example, you know, if there was some requirement like scale out versus edge, and suddenly scale out got, I mean, both of them PTLs have allocated and then some resources, and then scale out gets higher priority versus edge, then obviously then, you know, from a, suddenly the ranking changes from an end user advisory perspective, it causes a lot of confusion. That's what I meant. Mm-hmm. Right. So though all of them have been discussed with PTL, right? Correct.
Yes.
But Ramke, still we have to kind of, we are serving or we are trying to support the end user community. And if end user community thinks that A is more important than B, then that's what we have to do. I agree.
No. Vimal, I'm completely with you on that. All I'm saying is don't change what you're saying. Like, I mean, basically, when you've committed to something before, just please stay with that. Don't try to change it in the nth minute, right?
That's why having their input early on is very...
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then basically you... Yeah. Input early on and then you commit to something, right? And be done with it. Don't try to change the last minute. That's what I meant. Yeah.
No, I support that. And I've been saying that or telling Ella the same thing, that really let's push to have their input early on so that we don't, the last day we ask everybody to come and give a priority. That's not...
Exactly. Yeah. And this was like a rush thing, right? In the last minute and then like email discussion and, you know, basically there was one page created and everybody started randomly ranking without even studying what, you know, what it entails.
Ramke, the analogy here is like in standards, we don't want to mimic the standards of the procedure, but in standards, you have the stage one requirement. You finish that first, and then you base your architecture to meet those set of requirements for the platform. So, Vimal, you think that in coming weeks you can get the end user community to bring in their requirement, so we have a solid baseline for that?
I can't do that because I'm not there. I'm part of end user community, but I think they are member, and I have been suggesting that rather than having this informal end user community, appoint one chairperson and let that chairperson have meetings and get there and give a thought, just like user use case subcommittee and architecture subcommittee. This end user community has a chairperson, and the chairperson gather all the requirements and give those requirements in a timely manner, so that we can say that's the driver for Dublin, that's the driver for the next release, and that rest can follow. So I can't do that because I'm not on that committee, but I've been suggesting. And maybe that we bring up in the TSC meeting, Chris, that tells that it's really important that we have end user community input early on. Can't wait till the last day.
Well, on that note, I think we're beyond the architectural questions at the moment, but and I need to exit this meeting.
So we're a little bit over time. So we'll continue this on our next call. I appreciate everybody's input on this. I will send these slides around and then post them. And I like to see if we can continue diving down on this and then go into brainstorming next week and make sure that we identify the topics and then start identifying topic owners who will make a presentation back to the architecture team in the next few months.
Thanks, Chris.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks,
I appreciate everybody's input.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye. Bye.